Ms. Gaudemiller, you're next.
Thank you very much, and thank you for this invitation. The Blood Forum has put together a really impressive panel this morning, and it's an honor to be up here on this platform with my esteemed colleagues. I really am delighted to be here this morning. Many of you know me perhaps as an arms control, nuclear, nonproliferation expert from my past life. My remarks this morning will be focused on my current responsibilities, which are as the Deputy Secretary General of the NATO Alliance. But I did want to start with one comment since you brought up, where are we going with these nuclear modernization programs in the United States and Russia, and what does that foretell for the future of nuclear arms reduction? At the moment, I want to stress for all of you here in this audience, and happy to discuss it further, that the restraints of the New START Treaty hold. Both the United States and Russia are continuing to implement the New START Treaty, and they will be obligated by the treaty to reach the reduction levels of the treaty by February of 2018. So that date is coming up fast now. But both sides, even with their programs going on, and in fact New START was negotiated with the Russian modernization program in mind, so they will be constrained to 500 delivery vehicles. 500 delivery vehicles and no more, and that means 1,550 operationally deployed warheads, no more. Same on the U.S. side. There's been a lot of interest in the so-called U.S. modernization program. It's actually, as I think about it, more of a replacement program. And there's no talk in either Washington or Moscow right now of moving beyond 500 delivery vehicles and 1,550 operationally deployed warheads. Just, by way of comparison, when the START I treaty entered into force back in 1994, each side had approximately 12,000 operationally deployed warheads. So the numbers have come down precipitously in the past 20 years, and I see no reason why that will be reversed by the programs that both Moscow and Washington have in train now to replace older systems, whether ICBMs, intercontinental ballistic missiles, sea-launched ballistic missiles, or bomber aircraft. So again, happy to discuss any of this during our Q&A period, but I do want to stress, when you think about what Washington and Moscow have in train in terms of replacing older systems, it does not mean a breakout from the extant strategic arms reduction regimes. We may see that in the future, but at the moment we do not see it. Now, let me turn to, I wanted to bring us back to North Korea with two remarks that were made in recent times. First by my boss, Jens Stoltenberg, the Secretary General of NATO, who this last Sunday, the very day we saw the sixth North Korean nuclear test, put out a statement that said, "I strongly condemn that North Korea has conducted a sixth nuclear test today." He then went on to say, "NATO is concerned by Pyongyang's destabilizing pattern of behavior, which poses a threat to regional and international security." That is his statement in part. I won't read out the whole thing, but I refer you to it as how NATO has been concerned and interested in this matter. And furthermore, this July, when we saw a pattern of continued nuclear missile tests, well, missile tests with the aspiration, as we understand, from Pyongyang of beginning to load them up with nuclear warheads, the North Atlantic Council, that is our group of permanent representatives representing all 29 members of the alliance, put out a statement on July 12th saying, "The North Atlantic Council condemns in the strongest possible terms the DPRK's unprecedented launch of a ballistic missile of intercontinental range on 4 July, a major escalation that directly violates multiple UN Security Council resolutions and clearly demonstrates the growing threat posed by the DPRK to the alliance, to global peace and security, as well as to the global nonproliferation regime." I wanted to bring up these two statements this morning again to highlight for you that as far as NATO is concerned, the threat that North Korea is posing is becoming a global matter. This is not a matter only for the Asian countries, for the Asian allies of the United States, the ROK and Japan. It's not a matter simply for the members of the Six Party Talks, who have been engaged for many years now, China, Russia, the United States, ROK, Japan, as well as North Korea. This is a global matter and one that we have to consider as a global matter. So there are many challenges ahead of us, I think, as we consider what policy efforts must go forward. I think we've had an interesting week in terms of the kinds of statements that have been made. I do not agree with this kind of notion that we can somehow trade off the exercise program that the United States and the ROK conducts against the DPRK's testing program for both missiles and nuclear weapons. I think we have to bear in mind that this threat was launched way back in 1994 when the DPRK took steps to try to withdraw from the nonproliferation treaty regime. So we have been grappling with this problem for a long, long time, but at its inception, it was a problem that emanated from North Korea and from Pyongyang's push toward acquiring a nuclear weapons program. But I was very interested in this week in the context of the BRICS summit that both President Putin and President Xi re-emphasized the necessity of denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. I think that is a very important objective to restate, very important for all of us, I think, to be thinking about ways to re-energize efforts to accomplish that goal. Again, happy to discuss it further in our Q&A period, but from the perspective of the NATO alliance, this is a global challenge that must be addressed, and we are thinking about it in those terms in Brussels at NATO headquarters.